And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am publisher Ryan Burns. And how long has it been since we did one of these?
That's somewhere in January. So I think the better part of like two and a half, 3 months.
I know there's a lot of angry people that I get tweeted at me in the last couple of months. But we apologize for the long hiatus. Not a lot to talk about since the season ended. But yeah. It's been a where in the world is Carmen Santiago with Derek Burns trying to track him down through his various ventures throughout the country. And we are extremely happy to get him on the line tonight. So, Derek, how has the last few months been for you out there in the real world?
It's been good, guys. I'm glad to be back. Good to talk to you again. And it's been busy, but good to be back chatting.
All right, so a little bit of the overview for this episode is we're going to ask Derek about the new personnel that Minnesota has on staff now with offensive line coach Bart Miller, his different philosophies compared to Matt Limegrover's different types of things like that. We'll also talk a little bit about new offensive coordinator Jay Johnson, Derek's thoughts on that as well. Talk a little bit about the 2016 season. I know it's 6 months away, so it's a long ways off yet. We're in the middle of spring ball here, but get some thoughts from Derek on that, and then we'll close with some different offensive personnel things that I've seen through spring ball thus far for those of you who can't get enough of it on the interweb. So to start off here, Derek, let's talk about Bart Miller. Obviously, Derek was a Minnesota Golden Gopher offensive lineman under Mr. Mason there, so I'm very excited to get his thoughts on Bart's philosophies compared to Matt Limegrover's. But to start off things here, Derek, I mean, what did you think about, we'll talk about Matt Limegrover here. He was fired after 5 years. He was let go from the program there. It's no secret that his offensive line has struggled for the most part during his tenure. Again, I can't say enough good things about Matt as a person, but fact of the matter is the offensive line struggled and NFL was never really a possibility for any of his guys. I don't even remember during his tenure that an NFL guy even got a sniff from the Golden Gophers there. So, do you have any thoughts on Mr. Matt Limegrover's time at the University of Minnesota?
Well, I think the main thing you mentioned was, related to recruiting and or developing players. I think that was a big factor. And, you look at the statistics and look at the amount of guys that it was definitely below what you would expect and for sure what you would hope for guys being, graduating into the NFL and furthering their career. And so now whether that's, not having a sharpened eye for recruiting or being able to pick guys out of the crowd and maybe some guys under the radar, or whether that's being able to develop guys to the degree that you need to in order to get the most out of them, I'm not sure. But I think that was certainly a factor. I actually think that, scheme-wise and overall, we're probably not going to see gigantic changes. I think some of the schemes will stay the same, and I think some of what they were running was okay. I think we definitely saw some depth issues, and again, that goes back to personnel with some of the injuries last year. And even from, we've talked, I thought their three best players the year prior when they did well, none of those guys were able to play, and Campion, Epping, and Olsen, two of those guys graduating and then Campion dealing with injuries, that really hurt them. So I think the lack of depth and, personnel and then developing personnel, I think, was a big factor. But I know on the positive side, Matt was a technician, and he was a longtime coach, and it's my opinion that the longer these guys are around, the more they focus on technique and fundamentals. They really hone in on that. And so I think you might see a little bit of a change from that perspective with the new coach who's a young guy. And usually with the young guys, they tend to focus, they haven't developed that over years and years. So they tend to focus on things like effort and the physicality of the players and try to zero in on the type of person they're recruiting and developing. And then over time, of course, they develop their skills for tweaking the fundamentals and the technique of the players.
All right, yeah, let's continue talking about Bart Miller, the new offensive or offensive line coach. So obviously it's pretty well documented that he came and turned around the Wisconsin offensive line. I think it was what, maybe 2012-ish?
Yeah, area? I think that's when they fired their offensive line coach this season.
Yeah, so he it's, you know, pretty well documented. So what do you see, you know, scheme-wise, you said not a lot changes, maybe, but what are some, you know, stark differences that he's going to bring compared to a Matt Leimrover?
Well, I think what he's talked about, at least that stated publicly over and again, is that they're looking for a very physical group up front. They want to win being physical. And I guess what that tells me is in the power running game, running power, it's a game of attrition. And so being able to defeat people at the point of attack and, you know, things like get a push and wear down the defense over the course of the game, I think is going to be a priority for them. I think also, it's my opinion that from a schematic point of view, I think that there's a little bit of reaction going on to what's happened in college football. A lot of the defenses now are being built to stop fast spread offenses. So you're seeing a lot of teams recruiting and playing guys that are faster, maybe a little bit lighter. You know, obviously you want athleticism, but they might be sacrificing a little bit of size and a little bit of strength on the defensive side of the ball in order to stop teams sideline to sideline and stop things vertically. I think the counter to that on offense, and I think what the Gophers coaching staff is thinking, is coming with a physical power running game combats that. It's a little bit of what you've seen in the NFL. You know, if you're able to establish a power running game and a physical running game, you know, you can wear teams down, but you're also, you know, playing against a lighter, maybe quicker defense, things go into your favor. And lastly, I would say an emphasis on the power running game really leaves a lot of opportunities for play action. So if you think of it from the defender's point of view or a defensive coach's point of view, the way that you defeat a good power running team or a good physical team is to, you know, stack guys at the point of attack, you know, collapse the defense to the point of attack in order to stop that. And when you do that, that's going to open up play action more so than like a wide open spread, you know, zone game. So I know they'll do both, but that's, in my opinion, that's what they're thinking of. And I think that's what they want to accomplish with the physical power running game.
You know, one of the things that Bart is really stressed in his short time here at Minnesota is he wants to do three things. He wants to be really, really physical at the point of attack with his offensive linemen, even trying to establish that into the mental side of things for them. And then he also wants to run a ton of zone, and he wants to run a ton of power. Can you just, you know, for fans who aren't, you know, super into the different, you know, running schemes and running games that different teams run, do you want to give a, you know, a little bit of an overview of what a zone running game is compared to what a power running game is, you know, even maybe even a couple of plays that fans may be accustomed to seeing?
Sure. So as I said, you know, the Gophers have run both schemes, or at least some of both schemes, you know, for under the Jerry Kill and now Tracy Clay's era. So you may see there's all kinds of variations. So we could see some changes. But first of all, it's good to hear that. And I guess I had a hunch that they weren't going to totally abandon one or the other. It's good to run both, and I can talk a little bit about why. But on the zone running game, the philosophy is all of the offensive linemen reach block the play side gap, and the running back gets the ball and essentially reads. He has a, depending on how the defense lines up, starts his read either at the nose tackle or the front side defensive tackle, and then works his way backwards, checking each hole to determine where the hole is, and he makes his cut in the backfield. And so basically the philosophy behind a zone blocking scheme is to force the defense to defend every single gap. And so what you're trying to exploit is when the running back gets that handoff and he starts reading the blocks, he's looking for a defender out of his gap, either cheating into another gap or they're running a twist or a blitz or someone out of position or maybe pushed out of position. And so it forces you to be honest, in other words, on defense. A power running game is a little bit of the opposite. You're putting as many blockers as you can at the point of attack. So the offensive linemen on the play side all down block, and you use the H-back or fullback to kick out the play side end blocker and then you use the backside guard to pull around and act as a lead blocker for the running back. So unlike zone, the running back in this case, more often than not, is not making a cut or a read in the backfield. They're taking the handoff and attacking the point of attack, you know, at the hole predetermined. And the running back makes his read after he's broken the line of scrimmage. So there are, of course, exceptions. There are power running plays where there is an opportunity for a cutback. But in general, that's the scheme. And so the philosophy on power is the opposite of zone in that you're simply trying to outnumber the defense at the point of attack and the play side. So you're pulling an H-back in, a backside guard, and all your frontside offensive linemen to the point of attack, so you're trying to outnumber the defenders. So if you can think of this again from the defensive point of view, in order to stop that, you have to get as many defenders to the play side gap as you can. So the way that those two schemes counter each other is just a result of how it's defended. So again, if we go back to defending zone running plays, means every gap has to be defended. Everybody has to make sure they're not getting out of their gap. In order to defend a power running scheme, it's the opposite. You have to commit as many defenders as you can to the play side gap as fast as you can in order to defend it. So I guess I would wrap up by saying on zone, you're looking for people that are out of their gap, are leaving something open, and on power, you're looking for the opposite, where someone is, you're trying to get the defense reading the play or not reacting fast enough, and so you can hit the hole with many blockers and you know, and just through pure attrition, you know, when the play side hole, the play side line of scrimmage play, you know, right off the bat.
Right. So from, I want to switch gears just a little bit. So, you know, Jay Johnson's the new offensive coordinator, and Tracy Clays has been quoted as saying, you know, for the most part, the offense isn't going to change. I think somewhere around like 80%, he says, is going to stay intact. It's just more, maybe more terminology. Some of that stuff will be the nuance and change. But you know, there is going to be probably some different formations that we haven't seen, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe Ryan and Derek, both of you can comment on this. But what can we expect? You know, maybe slightly different than we haven't seen. You know, during the Matt Limegrover era.
I mean, just to even give Derek a little bit of a precursor before he just blinds us with all of his elite football takes. You know, as Luke said, 80% of this offense is going to remain the same. And I would expect that to truly be 80%, especially since Mitch Leidner isn't going to be able to go through spring practice and going through the different types of installs that Jay Johnson may want him to practice out on the field. I think that you're probably going to see a lot more of a spread type formation. It's a lot more jet sweep, little pop passes where it's a jet sweep type of coming across, quarterback gets in, just a little pop pass to the receiver. It's technically a pass, but, you know, different types of things. You know, one of the main things that Jay has said is that Minnesota has playmakers and he wants to make sure they get the ball and they get in space, whether that's Rodney Smith coming out of the backfield, whether that's Shannon Brooks, Eric Carter at the wide receiving core, Drew Olatarski, or even Brandon Lingan. Minnesota does have playmakers, and it's just going to be about whether Leidner has enough time to get them the ball in the offensive line can create holes. Derek, I mean, what do you think is going to be, you know, maybe the biggest change, but more importantly, what do you think is the most necessary change that this offense needs to go through from 2015 to improve in 2016?
Well, I think in adding on to the philosophy or the goal of getting your best players or most athletic players the ball in space, I think what they could benefit from most is lateral mobility. I've talked about it in the past, and even before this last season when the Gophers were running the ball very well inside, you know, I think of when David Cobb was there, I thought the one missing piece was a lateral running or passing game, just forcing the defense to defend sideline to sideline. And I think to a degree they were able to accomplish some of that with a short zone passing game that developed over the year, last year. And then also we saw a swing pass or a screen pass, you know, game develop later in the year, and I think they were just frankly trying to utilize the two good running backs they had and again get those guys more touches. So I think that will be an interesting development. I think you'll also see using the H-back or not a pure tight end, but lining up an H-back or a tight end in the backfield. I think you'll probably see more of a two-back zone running scheme. This is something that the Gophers switched to last year about halfway through the season. Thinking back to the Northwestern game, this is many times what coaches do is Northwestern really hurt the Gophers in the second half of that game running a two-back zone scheme. The Gophers then playing Purdue a week or two later, they decided to start running that. So coaches will often do this. They'll get really hurt or, you know, really beat by a scheme, and then they'll turn around and go, wow, let's see if we can install that with our guys. And they did. And so running a guy in the backfield that provides an opportunity for, you know, a pass-catching tight end to catch more passes out of the backfield, but it also allows you to not rely as heavily on the zone read and rely on the quarterback to run the ball as many times, because with a two-back running game, you're sending the blocking back in one direction and the running back in the other, and so it helps freeze the defense, isolate some blockers the same way a zone read does. So that'll be some things to look for, I think, this coming season. But you know, again, I think getting the guys ball in space and seeing a lateral, some speed in a lateral running game and maybe even a lateral passing game develop, I think would be nice.
All right, let's switch gears. So we're going to talk quickly. Each of us will give kind of like our what we're most looking forward to and what we're most not looking forward to in the 2016 season. And so, Derek, let's start with you. What are you most looking forward to going into this, coming out of spring ball and going into the actual season?
You know, actually, I would, as much as I'm curious to see what kind of schematic changes are and X's and O's changes are made, I'd be interesting to see what level of risk aversion is employed on offense. I think, especially in the non-conference season, I think one of the areas that I've been a little disappointed in the past few years is when the Gophers, especially against an inferior opponent or early in the season, some of those non-conference games, been really frustrating to see, 3-point wins or overtime wins or even a close loss or something when it really shouldn't have been that close. And so I also don't think that helps develop your offense very much in the non-conference season. So I know a traditional coach would say, you don't need to blow a team out by 40 points. You're only setting yourself up for turnovers and things like that. I get that, but I'm most looking forward to see if there's a little bit more aggressiveness on offense, frankly, and especially in some games where I feel like they, you can jump out to a lead and really give the defense that's been a big asset for under this administration, give that defense a chance to really pin their ears back and play as well as they can.
Yeah, Derek, that's a great point. You actually kind of stole my thunder. So I'm going to come up with another thing I'm looking forward to, and I think most people are probably looking forward to I'm looking forward to a slightly weaker schedule. Last year having to face number 2 ranked TCU at the time. You have an Ohio State. Who else do they have that I'm blanking on?
Well, I mean, just top to bottom, they had the second hardest schedule in America, according to Football Outsiders, on all FPS teams. And now you get to flip it. All right, I'm not going to steal your thunder.
No, you're not stealing my thunder at all. Now they get Rutgers.
They get Rutgers, Maryland, and Oregon State.
Yeah, and Oregon State was terrible last year, and they've had some
transfers.
Yeah, they had some struggles, even this year. And I know they're going over a coaching. It's the second year of a coaching change,
right? The former, with Wisconsin coach,
yeah,
there. Yep,
Gary Anderson.
And so, my last point, then I'm going to let you go off.
No, I think that's great.
Is just that Minnesota does go from the second hardest schedule in all of FBS football in America to now they get more of an Iowa or Wisconsin type schedule, where I believe Iowa was like the 102nd ranked strength of schedule in 2015. I think Wisconsin was in the mid 90s. So you go from that and you avoid the Michigans, the Ohio States, the TCUs. I know how much fans enjoy those games and coming to the bank to see them, but ultimately you want to see the guys in the field win.
Mm-hmm.
But all right.
So I think, to Derek's point, you know, without taking some risks, there's a struggle for the opportunity, right? And right now, in this season, the Gophers have to capitalize on an opportunity with a much weaker schedule. Statistically, a much weaker schedule. We don't know what it'll bring, but mostly I'm excited for the opportunity, and hopefully they can capitalize it and on it. And Clay's, you know, we'll get maybe another opportunity. You know, a lot of things have to come into place, athletic director, et cetera, et cetera. But there's yeah. a lot that could change, you know, even from this season, this 2016 season to 2017. And but at this point, it's not even worth speculating about.
Yeah, I mean, you even go from, you have a senior quarterback in this 2016 schedule where, again, you lose the Michigans, the Ohio States, the TCUs, and you gain an awful, I think, a 2-win Oregon State team, a new Maryland head coach out there, and then a Rutgers team that wasn't very good as well. And, you look at the schedule, obviously Minnesota was only 5-7 during the regular season and were able to get that 6th win in the bowl game. But if you want to have an Iowa type of run like Iowa did last year and get to the Rose Bowl, this is the type of schedule you need to have. And then I don't know that it gets any better. I mean, whatever you think about Mitch Leidner, I know I talked about this on Gopher Digest. He could go down as the all-time leading completion percentage quarterback in Gopher football history, which to some of your guys' ears is absolutely terrifying. And to some of your guys' ears, it's sweet music. So, and to go back even to Derek's point, that's something that I hadn't really even thought about in recent weeks, was that different risk aversion strategy. That's something that I know us three talked about at length during the season, where just different calls, even from the Northwestern game, where they literally didn't trust Mitch to do anything. Even the Michigan game, the different games throughout the season, different things with Jerry. And I think even during the non-conference where...
Yeah, they're just so stubborn, right? They're so stubborn. To constantly run power over and over and over.
Yeah, I think it was the Ohio game where Minnesota ended up winning 10-7. Well, it also doesn't help that you had Matt Limegrover calling the running plays, Jim Zabrowski with the passing game, and then Jerry was the ultimate decider. So three minds going into one, you can see how they didn't always have a meeting of minds, and now with Jay Johnson calling everything, that should hopefully... go away a little bit. And then you have Tracy, who's definitely not afraid to roll the dice from time to time. So, I mean, both of these guys had great points. But I guess, and again, I talked about it at length on Gopher Digest, was just I'm very excited for the different personnel groups that Minnesota has coming back. From Mitch Leidner, he's going to go down if he can play a majority of the games this season as a top five passer in terms of yards, completion percentage, pretty much every meaningful statistical category. Ultimately, you know, fans probably want more wins, but the kid's laid his life out there on the line and taking an absolute pummel. Is pummeling a word? Pummeling is a word? So the last two seasons, hopefully this offensive line can keep him up. I'm excited to see how Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith take that step forward from their freshman seasons. Two guys who rushed for, I think, about 700 yards each. I think if this offensive line can figure it out just a little bit, I think Shannon should have at least 1,000 yards this year. Again, he's a guy who flashed so much ability during the 2015 season. I mean, that Purdue game, a couple of those runs where he absolutely just chucked defenders is something that I'm probably always going to remember. You know, how does Rodney Smith take that next step? I think you may see him out wide a little bit. I wouldn't be afraid to put him in the slot knowing he's got pretty good hands. And then how does Minnesota try to replace Roderick Williams? Again, a guy that didn't really play a lot, but he played on a bunch of special teams, and that's something Minnesota has to replace. Who steps up to really figure out who's KJ May, a guy who caught 70-plus balls? Because the next closest guy, I think, was Drew Wolitarski at either 29 or 39. And then Eric Carter behind him. So, I mean, I think Eric's probably the most likely guy to replace them, but how do they replace KJ in the passing game? I'm excited for the defensive tackle depth. Again, I get this question, and, you know, I say this all the time on Gopher Digest, is just I'm excited for the defensive tackle depth because we don't have to go back to the Wisconsin game again where Scott Epke was out, Steven Richardson was out,
right?
Robert Nondale was out. You had a 275-pound Andrew Stelter, who's now 290-plus playing in there. You had Galen Elmore at 270 playing in there. a walk-on in Justin Carr, who should not have ever played a meaningful snap in the Big Ten against Wisconsin. And now you have depth there. Richardson's back. He's healthy. He's 300 pounds. He's an all-Big Ten type of defensive tackle. When he's healthy, he averaged more than a tackle for loss per game when he was playing last year. You have Scott Epke coming back, another guy over 290. Andrew Stelter, who's really taken a big step, I think, weight-wise, and it looks like good weight from his sophomore to junior campaign. A guy that, again, you wish you could have redshirted his freshman year, but Minnesota was in need of bodies. He's now over 290 pounds. You get Gary Moore, who was the defensive work team player of the year last season. He's a 300-pound body. I know he's been nicknamed Baby Sheet. You have Merrick Jackson, a JUCO All-American, a guy who's 315 pounds. So you have a bunch of meat in the middle there, and it shouldn't be you getting pushed around by the Wisconsins, the Iowas, because you finally have guys that are ready to play in the Big Ten. A couple more before we get to all doom and gloom about what we're most terrified about 6 months out. But I think this linebacking core is the deepest I've seen since, and I think in a long time. I mean, you look, there's legitimately, I think, seven guys who could play and be legitimate players for this team. You have Jonathan Celestine trying to replace Devondre Campbell. I think he's going to be a very good player in space like he had been his first two seasons. Cody Polk, I mean, he is pretty dang good, folks. I mean, he battled injuries last year, but he's a guy that I think is going to be a Damian Wilson type of player by the time he leaves, and he's going to be a junior this season. Jack Lynn, a guy who started two straight seasons out at outside linebacker going into his senior campaign. Julian Huff, he's continuing on the success he had at rush defensive end. You have Nick Rallis. He was a guy that really stood out to me when I went to the scrimmage last week. A guy who's 100% now an Edina native. His brother played. He's a guy that I think people forgot about, and I think even I was guilty of it myself, but he was flying around out there at the Mike linebacker position. Plus, you have Kamal Martin coming in from Burnsville and the all-world Carter Coughlin. Again, I don't know how Mike Sherrills is going to find the time to play all these different guys, but it's going to be certainly interesting. And then I think it's going to be fun to see Jalen Myrick and Keontae Harden out there. Now that Eric's gone, now that Brian's gone, Antonio Johnson, I think Demaryius Travis, folks, I think forgot a lot about him, but he is an NFL safety. I mean, there's no doubt about it to me. I think he's going to be an NFL guy. Jalen Myrick was PFF's, Pro Football Focus's, number two corner in the country before he went down with that punctured lung against Ohio State. Keontae Harden's coming off a great season, and they have three freshmen coming in who I think at least two of them play. So personnel-wise, there's a lot to be excited about, as Luke said, schedule-wise, and as Derek touched on, in terms of risk aversion with Tracy Clays compared to Jerry Kill and his staff, it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be fun to follow. But how about we start with Derek this time? So, Derek, what is a thing or two or three, if you want to ramble on like I did, that has you most concerned 6 months out here before this 2016 season?
Well, the obvious one I'll bring up and maybe won't expound too much because I think we all probably agree and we can all chime in on it, but the offensive line, putting together a new offensive line with a lot of new faces. Luckily the system is, going to stay, the calls and things are going to be different, but some of the schematics will stay the same. But putting together, I think that's their number one priority in spring football, is putting together an offensive line and finding five guys and then looking for depth. I mean, just getting five guys together and finding the best five, the most physical, the guys that are going to fit the best, and hopefully they don't have too many at one to, they're not overloaded with guys that can play guard and nobody that can play tackle or something, problem like that, which can happen. I think that's a little bit scary. At the same time, I'm not concerned from the standpoint of guys playing together, saying, well, these guys haven't played together in the past. They don't have 2-3 years together, so it's not going to work. I don't subscribe to that theory. I think if you have a couple weeks with the guy next to you to work out, to sort of develop a feel of playing with those guys, I think that's enough. But, again, just developing that. So I'll stop on that so you guys can talk about it too. The other thing, and Ryan, you'll probably disagree with me, but the secondary to me, not because I don't feel like they can do it, and I know they have excellent coaching in the secondary, but only because they're losing so much talent there. I just, to me, that's, wouldn't say scared, but it's tough shoes to fill. I know they do have guys coming back, but this defense is predicated on the cornerbacks playing a lot of tight island coverage, and it's also predicated on the safeties, the strong safeties, providing a lot of help in the running game. And so that's specifically the safety part in the running game, I think, did hurt them down the stretch because of the injuries they had. They really rely on the strong safeties and even at times the free safeties to fill in off tackle when things get, basically everything gets funneled by the wide defensive ends, get funneled inside the tackles or inside the end man, and they rely on those safeties to come up fast on run support. So only because of the scheme and because of how much talent they're losing there, you know, that would be the other thing I would mention, that I hope they can do it. I have faith they can, but that'll be something to watch.
All right. I got a couple. I'll echo the offensive line. I think that's probably everyone's number one concern based on performance
yes.
last year.
Yes.
And I don't think it's just the three of us. I think it's probably unanimous, for Gopher fans everywhere. So I won't expound on that much. That issue is pretty well known. Two things I'm concerned about. Number one, pass rush. That's been really something we haven't seen very consistently the entire Jerry Kill era. You know, Theron Cochran had a pretty good year. What was that, his sophomore campaign?
Yeah, when he had Rashid in the middle there.
Yeah. So they had a decent pass rush then, but never anything terribly consistent. And, you know, as good as their secondary is, they almost rely on them too much. And I'd like to see that improve. I'd like to see them get a few more sacks and, you know, not give those quarterbacks so much time. Number two, I am a little bit concerned on what they're going to do kicking wise. How are they going to replace Pete Mortel? Is Santoso going to handle both duties? Is he going to just punt? Is he going to just kick? I feel like that to me is a little bit up in the air. You know, it seems like not such a huge portion of the game, but it really is. Those are big critical downs, and I don't know. I was a kicker, so I empathize with them. Yeah, so I feel like that is a big part of the game, and it is hard to do both at one time. So I'd rather them find a way to find two guys, and hopefully they'll be able to do that.
I mean, there is obviously when you only go 6-7 or 5-7, however you want to look at it. I mean, there is a lot of areas for improvement, and there's a lot of areas for concern. I think you guys both touched on with this offensive line. While I'm not as concerned about the starters and what they project to be, with the two JUCO guys filling in, the two Texans, Connor Mays and Tyler Moore being in your interior, and then Jonah Persig, his senior year at right tackle, I think that group is probably better than what last year's would be. The issue is the depth behind it is just is not there. It isn't there. And even trying to, you know, think about it from an NFL standpoint where you have a swing tackle, a swing guard, and you have a backup center, I couldn't tell you besides maybe backup center what the plan is, because Jared Weiler is a redshirt sophomore coming off ACL surgery, I think 14 months ago or so. You know, he looks finally like he's healthy, and he's probably your backup center and guard at this point. And then you have a bunch of redshirt freshmen. And I don't know that they're that are true freshmen right now going through spring ball. And I just don't believe that they're significantly ready to play. You know, Nick Conley was a guy I talked a lot about in the last few months here, the kid from Red Wing. I'd heard a lot of good things about him. And it's not fair to him because, you know, I heard a lot of different things from different people and different sources. But and I've only had the chance to really see one practice so far, and I think 6 of the last 10 are going to be open to the media. So I'll get to get a better idea of what he's about. But I just thought from the different things I heard this offseason that he'd be farther along than he was. And Chad Fanning, he'll be a redshirt junior. The walk-on there from De La Salle was starting over him at left tackle because Garrison Wright, the JUCO transfer, was out. So anytime a situation like that happens, again, Chad has 3 years on Nick, and that's a huge thing in terms of offensive line development and trying to get bigger and stronger and work on that lateral quickness to stay in front of these defensive ends. But the depth at offensive line is something that if Minnesota goes through a injury type of situation like they did in 2015 with the offensive line, even with the schedule flipping, I don't know how successful Minnesota can be because I don't know that they have the bodies on the offensive line that are can really sustain the depth. And also, like Luke talked about, with the defensive end depth, just trying to even get a pass rush. You graduate Alex Keith, Theron Cochran, so how do you replace them? Again, two guys that really didn't bring a lot, but Hank Epke started, I think, a majority of the games last season, and he finished with like 25 tackles and 2 sacks. That's 2 straight years Minnesota's had just no production out of the defensive end spots.
No, I was going to make funny because you whiffed on that prediction last year.
Oh, yeah, that was bad, guys. Derek, if you don't know what I'm specifically referencing, I literally swung and missed and fell down a couple different times. I said Hank Epke was going to have like 9 sacks because he was unblockable. Turns out Minnesota's offensive tackles were just abysmal and couldn't stop a speed rush. So swing and a miss, everyone. Put that one in the back burner. But how do they get a pass rush? I mean, you have Hank coming back, great, but again, he's a speed rush, and if you have a guy who can stop a speed rush, he doesn't have an arsenal of moves to really do too much. You have Galen Elmore, who's now starting, going to be a true junior next season. How much of an explosion can he make? Can he make anything different there with trying to replace TC? Winston Dilatti-Boudaire, a kid who's going to be a redshirt freshman who really just only turned 18, so it's not really fair to get him. I just think that they're going to have to, with this pass rush, they're going to have to figure something out with these blitzing linebackers. I think that you're going to see, with the depth Minnesota has at defensive tackle, you'll see Steven Richardson and Merrick Jackson and on third down at defensive tackle at the 1 and 3 techniques. And then you'll probably have like 4 or 5 linebackers out there. You'll have a Julian Huff out there on one side, maybe a Jonathan Celestine, Carter Coughlin, Nick Rallis, or Kamal Martin on the other side, and then Minnesota tries to bring pressure. Almost like a 2-4-5 look, potentially. Again, they experimented with it a little bit with Jay Savel during the bowl game. There was only a handful of plays or so. But Jay Savel knows, that Minnesota's defensive coordinator, that he has to get pressure. Again, he was the defensive backs coach for the last 4 years. He is the prime example of someone who knows that his defensive backs have been covering guys far too long for an extended period of time, I should say, for 4+ years. So he knows he has to get pressure for his defensive backs to really start to shine. And I don't know how, again, they're going to have to be creative because I don't know that the pass rushers are there yet. But it's certainly going to be interesting. And then one other I'll touch on is I am concerned about the wide receiver position a bit. Again, how do you replace KJ? Okay, Drew's going to be a true senior, I believe, next year. He's had some drop issues. The bowl game to me stands out where Leidner finally put a perfect deep ball right in stride, and he would have been an 80-yard-plus touchdown, but I'm still not bitter about that or anything. who steps up? Is Eric Carter fill KJ's role? Is it Drew Olatarski? Is it Rashad still trying to be that big play threat? And then what else do you have behind them? You know, Melvin Holland has significantly struggled with drops since he's been here. Again, the kid, he runs very good routes, and he can get open, but he can't catch the ball consistently. That's his knock. Isaiah Gentry, a kid who's going to be a redshirt sophomore, he's flashed at times. Again, he has acceleration like most fans haven't seen here in that flash during the non-conference season, but he can't stay healthy with his hamstring. Hunter Register, a kid from Louisiana who's going to be a redshirt freshman, someone who really came from a wing T offense down there, doesn't have the route tree that wide receivers coach Brian Anderson wants him to have to really be a contributor out there. Again, where are you going to find these bodies? You have 3 wide receivers coming in from the state of Minnesota, and Phillip Howard, Tyler Johnson, who just won a state basketball title with Minneapolis North, and then Drew Hemileski down there in Marshall. You have some athletes coming in, but you need to find a way to give Mitch some guys who are going to get open consistently, can catch the ball, and give him just a place to throw the ball to. And as for as much as a Leidner Island guy as you know I am with JG and a bunch of you guys, I am a little bit concerned about Mitch if he can truly stay healthy because of this offensive line. He takes a ton of hits. He takes way more hits than he probably should. And you know he's got the foot fracture that he's going with that he's recovering from surgery. He dealt with other various injuries his sophomore year. And if this offensive line depth is seriously tested, I don't know that how he stays healthy for more than a few games again for the amount of hits he's going to take. Again, this offense is going to 80% of it's probably going to remain the same. So how does he take these 15 hits a game for 12 games or 13 games or whatever it is? That's a lot of hits for one guy to take. Even though Mitch is a huge guy at 6'4", 230, again, he can take some of the hits, but we don't need as many hits on that Mitch has taken over the past few seasons. So, again, I like how we end on doom and gloom, by the way.
Yeah, that was really nice of us.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. It's spring practice. We're maybe, what, like 4 or 5 practices in?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a third. A lot can change in that time. You know, they're going to get some stuff installed. And a lot's going to change before the season starts, I'd have to imagine.
It will. Yeah, absolutely it will. But I think that's going to wrap it up here. Again, I really did want to get into the different types of things I've been seeing at practice on this podcast. But because of the different types of scheduling that Minnesota's had this year where they haven't allowed media to be in to see, I've only really seen one practice. And I really don't want to start making assumptions off one thing that I've seen. I want to we'll record here again in the next couple of weeks after I've had a chance to see more than one practice.
Yeah, let's not go with a small sample size and start taking flaming hot takes here.
Yeah, Derek, I think that'd probably be a good idea. So to wrap things up here again, we really do apologize for the 2-month hiatus, but we wanted to make sure we had the Mr. Derek Burns, one of the most elite Gopher football minds in all of the country, joining us again here on the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast. So, Derek, we can't thank you enough for finding time in that heck of a traveling schedule that you've combated here the last few months. So we appreciate you taking the time, friend.
I appreciate it, guys. And, again, good to talk. And it's good to be talking about spring ball and not practicing in spring ball. So it's good to be talking about it instead.
Yeah, definitely. So hopefully, you know, if you're at a spring practice, find Mr. Burns, say hi. I'm sure he'll love it. For the most part, it should be a fun ride throughout the spring, and we'll get into fall ball here real soon.
Yeah, if you guys do come to a spring practice, please come and talk Gopher football with me. Again, it's just going to be, it's me and the media guys just having some fun there, just talking with different guys. Again, you know, I'm there for you guys. I get to see a lot more of Gopher football than most people, and I'm very lucky to do so. So, you know, I'll be the only guy there that looks like he's 23 years old, who's 6'4" and above, with some really nasty facial hair that Luke and I are actually kind of matching about, which is very adorable.
Yeah, it's really cute.
So, if you do come to a Gopher football practice here, or even the spring game, and if you see me, please come up, introduce yourself, and I'd love to talk some Gopher football with you.
All right, well, we'll be back soon, so thanks for listening. Go Gophers.